Glad to have you along today, and we're going to be talking with three very interesting people. Stephen Losey and Sean Riley from the Federal Times are going to give us a rundown on what's happening on Capitol Hill, what fate may await federal workers. And then at 10:30, we're going to have an exit interview with Tom Trabuca. He is the first and only spokesman for the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, otherwise known as the TSP. And Tom has been there for these many years. He's retiring at the end of the month, and we want to kind of get an overview from it. And some people have sent in some questions, so I hope you can stick around for that. Steve and Sean, are you there?
Here. How are you?
Gents, hey, thank you for coming in again and doing this thing. There's so much going on, I don't even know where to start. I thought I would leave the room and just let you guys talk. But, you know, I'm looking at our bill tracker here on Federal News Radio on our homepage, and there's so many things pending that are very serious for federal workers. Could you run down some of them?
Well, you touched on the biggest news, the increase in retirement contributions
right.
for future federal employees. It was passed last Friday. It hasn't yet been signed by President Obama, but he is, of course, going to sign it. He had a big event yesterday where he was praising it. So that's going to happen. That is the first time that the contributions have been changed for federal employees since FERS was implemented, I believe. And it's going to require future federal employees to pay 3.1% of their paychecks towards their FERS pensions. That's up from the current 0.8%, almost quadrupling the amount. It's going to mean for example, a GS-12 in Washington, it's going to mean an extra $66 per taken out of his paycheck for retirement. So it's going to be big. And I think one of the most interesting things about that is that Senator Cardin, Ben Cardin from Maryland, he told the Washington Post last week that it became all that much more tougher to argue against increasing retirement contributions once President Obama came out and reiterated his call for federal employees to increase, all federal employees, that is, to increase their contributions by 1.2%. So I think we've not seen the last of this whole retirement contribution issue. It's going to come back. There's bipartisan support from both the president and certainly Republicans want to increase that. So keep watching for more developments on that.
Well, I know it's one thing, too, to do this prospectively and to say that anybody hired starting January 1 of 2013 will have to pay this. But they're new people. They're coming in. They really won't know the difference. But I would think that the big savings and the thing that Congress will go after next is current employees.
I think that's absolutely right. I think that's the other shoe just waiting to drop.
Okay. Now, you had a piece this week about this phased retirement. OPM Director John Barry says it's kind of the jewel in the crown, and also it's a no-brainer. How would this work? Because it sounds very exciting from what I've read.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. It's something that OPM proposed 2 years ago as part of a hiring reform bill. It didn't really go anywhere. So this year, they've tucked it into the White House's 2013 budget, hoping that gives it a little bit more clout. Basically, if you're a federal employee and you're getting near retirement, you know, but maybe you're not ready to, you know, spend all your time out on the golf course or reading books. Maybe you want to, you know, just do a little part-time work. The way this would work is you would work about half your time, say 20 hours a week or so. You would earn half your paycheck, but you would also get half of your pension. And you would continue to earn new retirement benefits. Your high three would continue to go up, for example, and your length of service would continue to accrue. So you'd get a little bit when you would fully retire. It'd be a little bit sweeter. But they're looking at it as a way to ease people into retirement, to help with knowledge transfer. One of the main pillars of this proposal is it would require people to spend roughly 20% of their time mentoring younger employees to make sure that all that knowledge is passed on when they're gone.
Well, they've been talking about a brain drain literally since the 1990s, but apparently the brain is starting to drain. The retirements have picked up dramatically this year. Is that right?
That's right. We got some stats from OPM, final stats for 2011, and there was a 24% spike in the number of retirement applications OPM received over the previous year. So, yeah, it's definitely – it's evident that – these buyouts are taken in effect, all the threats to federal employees' pensions, possible, you know, possibly extending the pay freeze, all that stuff is combining and is resulting in what could be the beginning of that long-awaited retirement wave.
Well, you know, that phased retirement, I remember reading some years back, we're not talking now about, in this study, we're not talking about people who do hard physical manual labor because they want to quit as soon as possible for good reasons. But most of us don't do that. Most of us work in office environments, professional administrative things. And they did a survey and they found that a lot of people said they didn't want to retire, they just wanted to work less. And that would fit in perfectly, that mindset, with this phased retirement.
That's right. You know, it's also worth noting that law enforcement officers, nuclear materials couriers, air traffic controllers, all the people who are facing mandatory retirement ages, they would not be eligible for this. But for the rest of primarily the kind of office guys, as you said, would probably be most interested in this. Yeah, they don't want to be put entirely out to pasture. They just want to kind of have a little bit more time to enjoy their twilight years.
Well, and I think
they want to feel useful.
I think there's something too. If you like your work, you're proud of your agency, you're happy to serve the government. The idea of mentoring somebody, of helping a young person come in to do the job, I think is very appealing on an aesthetic level.
Exactly. I mean, if you've been there, what, 3-4 decades maybe, you've got a lot of experience. You've got a lot of war stories that you're going to want to share. You know, teach people how to not mess things up once you're gone. And if you've put your entire career into an agency, you don't want to see things go wrong. So you have a vested interest in making sure that your legacy continues. So, yeah, I think there would be a lot of people who would be interested in this.
Yeah. Sean, I know you watch the Postal Service like a hawk. They're talking about early retirements. I don't know if the buyout word has been uttered again lately, and also about setting up their own health plan. What's going on with the Postal Service?
Well, it's very interesting, Mike. Last Thursday, mid-afternoon, the Postal Service announced on very short notice that it was releasing an updated version of its 5-year business plan. And there wasn't a huge amount that was new there, but what it did was sort of pull together a lot of things the Postal Service has been talking about over the last year that they need to do to essentially regain profitability. As you know, they reported a $3.3 billion net loss for the first quarter of FY 2012. And are again worried that they may run out of money by this fall and not be able to make a workers' comp payment that's due to the Labor Department. What this plan does is explicitly mention the possibility of some sort of voluntary early retirement program. You know, they acknowledge that it is under consideration. In the past, at least in my experience, all the Postal Service has done in terms of discussing what options are available for reducing the workforce is say that everything's on the table. In this case, the Chief Financial Officer, Joe Corbett, did acknowledge that they are looking at that and should be announcing a way forward soon. The Postal Service also provided some specific year-by-year goals for how much they want to reduce their workforce from now through, I think, 2016. And what it shows is that this year, in fiscal 2012, they want to cut 66,000 career employees, which would be more than 10% of the current career workforce. And it's hard to see, given normal rates of attrition around 30,000 employees per year, how they can get to that reach that goal without some kind of early retirement, early out program. They wouldn't discuss later on the possibility of buyouts. Steve had heard from OPM Director John Barry last week that they are also looking at buyouts, but they wouldn't elaborate on that.
Okay, I want to continue with that. We need to take a short break here on 1500 AM, but we'll be right back.
To you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individually.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is the value of a central provider like GSA and its Federal Acquisition Service?
How is FAS managing in an era of fiscal constraint? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Stephen Kempf, Commissioner, GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Gina Murphy Darling, Mrs. Green of Mrs. Green's World at MrsGreensWorld.com. She is a successful corporate executive who transformed herself to fulfill her life's mission to inform and connect individuals and businesses in the movement towards global sustainability. Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Eagles fans, tickets to American University basketball's final two regular season home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or call the athletic ticket office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Catch AU's next home game Thursday, February 23rd against Bucknell at 7 p.m. The first 1,000 fans will receive a Coach Jeff Jones bobblehead doll, courtesy of Geico.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hi, this is Byron Kerr. I know it's great to listen to me tell you all about the shaking and baking and thunder jams of Colonials men's basketball on Federal News Radio, but there's nothing like seeing it live at the Charles E. Smith Center. Come to Foggy Bottom with the whole family to raise high the buff and blue and enjoy great college hoops against some of the country's most exciting teams at a great price. I'll still be around for road games, so visit gwsports.com or call 202-994-7325 to raise high the buff and blue today.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Stephen Losey and Sean Roddy from the Federal Times. And Sean, we were talking about the Postal Service, and I know we have a goodly number of listeners who work with the Postal Service, because every time we discuss this, we get emails, and that is a good thing. You said they were talking about early retirements, but that the Postal Service had not used the buyout word yet.
That's right. They haven't confirmed that. And, you know, the other question that's out there is how they would pay for it, given their cash flow situation. You know, in regard to any possible early retirement program, as I understand it, you know, without any new source of funding, they would essentially have to agree to pay people who took the offer in arrears, that you would be guaranteed to get the money, but they would have to wait perhaps a few months before they actually received the incentive, which might be around $25,000 paid out over 2 years, although they didn't mention any specific numbers. They also got into a little bit of detail, much more than they have in the past, again, to my knowledge, on how they would go about restructuring their health care benefits. You know, as we talked about on the show before, back last August, the Postal Service said it wanted to create its own health insurance program, you know, pull its employees and retirees out of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Plan. And the question has been how they would do that. Now, Mr. Corbett, the CFO, said they are getting close to announcing a detailed plan that would actually put money in employees' pockets, contrary to concerns that it would actually reduce, you know, end up cutting benefits or costing more. And there are a couple of different aspects to what they do or what they're proposing to do. One is create three distinct categories of participants. This would be retirees, current employees, and new hires. And for retirees, what they'd like to do is, quote-unquote, establish incentives for Medicare eligibles to fully participate in Medicare benefits, so essentially try and get them to use Medicare as their insurer first resort rather than going to the FEHBP. It's not so clear what they would do current hires and for current employees and new hires, but they do anticipate saving some money on that. So details still forthcoming, but apparently fairly soon.
Well, if they figure out a way to do it without cutting benefits and or increasing the employee share of premiums, they will have some geniuses in the house there. Walton Francis, who writes the Washington Consumer Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans, said he doesn't see how it could be done.
Well, I think a lot of people have that question, given that the trend in healthcare costs, not just for the Postal Service, the federal government, but across the board, you know, the trend has been up and usually up considerably faster than the overall inflation rate.
Looking at some of the bills that are actually pending in Congress now, these are not pie-in-the-sky things. These are things that are pending. One of them would increase pension contributions for everybody, for current employees. Another would eliminate within-grade pay raises or put a freeze on them. Another would extend the pay freeze to 2014, yet another to 2015. There is a proposal to cut the workforce by 5%, hire no more than 2 employees for every 3 who leave. There's one to cut the workforce 10%, one to increase contribution rates for federal workers, an extended pay freeze, reform workers' comp, and freeze federal pay through 2013. What do you think is the most likely to happen?
Oh, it's enough to make your head spin.
Yeah.
I think the most likely, out of the laundry list you just rattled off there, the most likely one is the proposal to increase retirement contributions for current federal employees. This is Congressman Dennis Ross's bill. He's the Republican from Florida. He chairs the subcommittee in the House that's in charge of federal employees. He wants to increase federal employees' pensions by 1.5% over a 3-year period, which differs from Obama's proposal, which is slightly less, 1.2%. He says that it's necessary to he says that the federal government can't afford to pay out pensions when federal employees are paying just FERS employees, that is, paying just 0.8%. Now, and he says that this increase is needed to make sure the government can continue to keep the promises it has made. Now, one thing that's interesting is that the other week the House Republican leadership tried to attach this bill, they did attach this bill to a massive surface transportation bill, which did not make Congressman Ross happy at all. He says that if federal employees have to pay more, it shouldn't be used to pay for another more spending. He said it should be used to put down the deficit. Now, that surface transportation bill has, of course, encountered a lot of resistance, not just from Democrats, but from some Republicans, and its status is unclear. It's kind of in limbo. So it's kind of unclear as to whether how this SAFE Act is going to come up, but it's Ross's bill. It's got the support from Congressman Daryl Issa, who chairs the House Oversight Committee. And I think we're going to see some movement on that, you know, probably in the next month or so.
In the past, we've had some people in the position that Mr. Ross is in now, that's chairing an important subcommittee, who, you know, just did not like federal workers. They just, you know, they were anti-bureaucrat. They wanted to throw the pointy heads into the Potomac River and get rid of them and start all over again. I don't get that sense with Mr. Ross. Do you?
I don't think so. I don't get that sense either. I mean, of course, some of the unions have accused him of that.
Yeah.
When I speak to him, I don't get a sense of malice or anything like that from Ross. I think he does. I think he is genuinely concerned about the financial state of the government and the deficit problem, which has, of course, gotten a whole lot of attention.
Well, I thought it was telling what you just said, that he's proposed this, but as part of deficit reduction, and when some other members of Congress said, oh, we'll take this and put it toward repairing roads and what, and he said, no, that's not right. That's not why we're doing it.
Yeah, I found that quite interesting and a little surprising. It wasn't just oh, this isn't great. It was a flat out, no, this is wrong. So I think that I thought that was a particularly interesting development.
Yeah, there's some things that are not on the radar now that we were talking about a few months ago. One of them would be to increase the amount of the percentage of health benefit premiums that federal workers and retirees now pay. They now pay about 30% less than the Postal Service. And there was talk from some of these commissions about increasing that amount each year up until feds were paying 40% to 50% of the tab. I haven't seen that lately. Have you?
No, that's kind of gone on the back burner. What you're talking about is the proposal to move FEHBP to what's called a premium support system, where the federal government pays kind of a flat amount, and then they increase that by, I believe it was each year by, I believe, GDP plus one percentage point, which critics say is would not even come close to the rate of healthcare cost premium increases, and they say it would have the effect of shifting the bulk of healthcare premium costs onto the federal employee, take a big chunk out of their paycheck after several years. Now, that's something that was proposed in the Simpson-Bowles Commission, and a few other people have floated it since then. But as you said, it hasn't really surfaced lately, so we're just kind of waiting and see. I would not be surprised if it came back eventually.
It would be a tremendous money saver, because even in periods of deflation, when prices are going down, the rate of medical inflation is usually 4 or 5 times higher. It can be, you know, a 2% increase in the cost of living, the consumer price index, but medical inflation might go up 8 or 9% at the same point.
That's right. It would save money for the government, but it would take a big bite out of Fed's paychecks.
Yeah. Okay, what about this chained CPI using a new formula that in effect would produce smaller cost of living adjustments in the future?
Yeah, the chain CPI would kind of change the rate of inflation that they use to adjust the future COLA increases for federal retirees' pensions, and it would result in a lower rate of increase. Now, as with the premium support system for healthcare, that's something that was floated last year. And it's kind of taken a bit of a backseat. I haven't heard any discussion on that recently. It was coming out in a lot of deficit reduction proposals. People were pitching it to the super committee last summer. But yeah, it's kind of taken a backseat lately.
Well, congressional Democrats, particularly in the Senate side, have said they're not going to let anybody beat up on federal workers anymore. But with the exception of Senator Cardin, who's up for re-election this year, and Mikulski, of course, from Maryland, one of the Virginia senators, Warner, has sort of taken their side, and you have Senator Lieberman and Senator Collins. But other than that, do federal workers have any real champions in Congress?
They are growing fewer and more and far between. Even President Obama, who was viewed as being very pro-federal employee, as I said, he came out last week and reiterated his call to have feds increase their retirement contributions. And with this whole payroll tax and unemployment insurance hike to future feds' pensions, the National Journal reported that Obama was calling wavering Democrats who didn't want to increase the retirement contributions, and saying, "We got to do this. You got to bite the bullet on this one." So I think President Obama's support for federal employees only goes so far.
Well, that's my sense of it, and I appreciate you guys for being here with us, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Steve Losey, Sean Riley. We'll be right back after this message.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. "What kind of word is GEICO anyway?" "An excellent question," I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. "Interesting," the man replied. "But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name?" I said, "it's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job." We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
We look at applications and software development from an architectural view today. At least we should, because quite frankly, it's so much easier to design security in than to find the thousands or tens of thousands of vulnerabilities that might exist in that software at a later date once deployed.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
You don't need dams, waterfalls, or waves to get hydroelectric power anymore. A new technology is tapping energy from even slow-moving streams. Engineers have long known that cylindrical objects in the path of moving water can create strong swirls that often need to be suppressed to prevent damage. But Michael Bernitsis, a University of Michigan engineer, saw things differently.
It dawned on me that we can possibly do exactly the opposite, enhance these kind of destructive phenomena, control them, and harness the energy.
Bernitsis built ladder-like devices attached to electromagnets. When placed in a stream, the rungs both create spinning currents of water and are allowed to move in the turbulence, generating electricity. Then he lined the devices up in a way that mimics schools of fish, which
basically glide between vortices generated by the fish ahead of them.
Bernitsis says such positioning can amplify power generation, even in gently flowing rivers. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and my guest coming up is Tom Trabuca. He has been the spokesman for the Federal Thrift Investment Board, the TSP, since its inception. And, Tom, you're pulling the plug this month, huh?
Hello, Mike. Yes, I am. On Leap Day, I'm taking the leap into retirement.
And your first action is going to be to sleep a little later.
Sleep a little later and learn about Washington rush hour on the news rather than as
yes,
a participant.
Yes, that's one of the that's one of the real joys of retirement, people tell me. Tom, I was looking at something. You were good enough to send a bunch of documents over to with the board, and one of them is, I assume it may be your first press release.
That's right.
This is amazing because the Thrift Savings Board now is an established institution. You have a number of employees, a very professional staff. It's the biggest, any way you hack it, it's the biggest in the country, 401k what have you. And yet this press release, you have a Benjamin Franklin Station post office box 511. So you guys were operating out of shoeboxes, weren't you?
That's right. Yeah, we were only, I had been hired 3 months, 4 months before this, as had just about everybody else. And we kind of threw this thing together in about 6 months to get the contributions first flowing. So we were on a very, very tight time schedule. And as you said, living out of a post office box at Ben Franklin Station.
Yeah, somebody had to go pick up the mail twice a day.
That's right.
Very, very interesting. But well, you've seen so many changes. I mean, did you have any idea at the time that it was going to be as big as it is?
We did not. I did not, at any rate. It was all fraught. What I thought at the time was this can go wrong so many different ways. And that was kind of our motivator, was running around trying to make sure it didn't go wrong and then just staying focused on the task at hand. And, the fact that we were able to successfully launch and administer a new employee benefit that's earned the confidence of federal employees, their unions, the Congress, the administration, Republicans and Democrats alike is really a testament to the desire of the thing. You know, Congress put this together over a period of years. The late Senator Ted Stevens honchoed the whole thing through, but Democrats and Republicans were involved, and they came up with what they referred to as a hybrid plan with FERS, the TSP being a part of that. And consequently, because there was buy-in from so many people, it has been highly successful.
You know, I think the union participation can't be overpraised. The postal unions in particular, but the others as well, got into this and recommended that their people join it, use it, and they were part of the decision-making process. And that's one of the reasons the membership in the Postal Service is as high as it is.
Oh, it's just remarkable that they have a contribution rate level of over 5% for their FERS employees, meaning they're picking up the entire match for 95% of their workforce. It's just a stunning number. And it's because the employees in the Postal Service trust their unions, and their unions took a hard look at this and said, this is good for our employees, and we don't want to leave money on the table. They know how to bargain, and they were not going to let that matching contribution slide away.
When the system started, I think a lot of people had doubts about how well it would work. Yet we've had on our radio show here, Francis Rose and I had John Bogle, the father of the index fund and the founder of Vanguard, and he said he would like to get into the TSP.
Yes.
He would like to invest his money. Alan Roth of CBS Money Watch said the same thing. He's looking for a way to get into the TSP. You seem to have a lot of satisfied customers and a lot of people like me who are on the outside poking our noses against the fence, wishing we could get in. But there are detractors as well. There's a fairly hard, small but hardcore group of people who think the TSP is part of the nanny state, that it's keeping them from investing as often as they want and as broadly and as widely as they would like. What do you say to that?
Well, what I will do is cite the founder of the 401k. His name is Ted Benna, and he is an investment advisor, now largely retired, in the Philadelphia area. And he said in a recent story, I believe it was in November, December, you can Google it and find it, that if he had it to do over again, the one thing he would do is limit the choices, the investment choices for participants, to only a few good ones. And he further stated that expecting everyday workers to become investment experts is unrealistic. And I know there are a number of smart people out there in many fields, including investments, and they may like more choices, more freedom, the opportunity to really get out there and play the game. But for the vast majority of people, what they're looking for is a sound way to invest broadly in the markets. And that, of course, is what Congress wanted to do as well. They wanted to allow federal employees to get the same type of benefits that private sector workers got from their 401k plans, but they recognized the government would be a big player in this field, and the way for the government to do it without affecting markets would be to set up these broad-based index funds so that you just go into the entire entire sector. You do not pick and choose winners and losers.
Every time I deal with this subject in the column of the people who want more choices and whatnot, a goodly number of readers and listeners will email or call and remind that they can do this right now. They can do this with their own money and put it in an IRA if they want to walk on the wild side.
That's exactly right. And you see that come up a little bit where somebody will say, well, I only put in the 5% into the TSP to get the match. The rest of my money I invest on the outside, and I have all of these choices. And that's fine. I mean, but don't forget that match. That's an important thing.
Yeah, that's unprecedented. And during the recession, a number of companies, the relatively few that offered a match, some of them dropped it or reduced it dramatically. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Know that, Tom. A couple of questions here. One of them is, over the years, there's been tremendous emotional and political pressure, and it was applied to you guys, and I know it was applied to me as well, from groups who wanted a piece of the action, the TSP.
Right.
And they range you could cover the waterfront, dot-coms, precious metals, REITs, real estate investment trusts. And I guess you took to heart what Congress told you is to keep it simple, right?
That's right. But we do look at these things. I will say that periodically with our investment advisor, we look at what's going on out there in the market. We do it about every 5 years and take a look and see if there's anything that's developed out there that may be beneficial to our broad array of participants. So we normally look at about a dozen different options and then sort through them and come to a conclusion on whether or not we should add funds. You may recall back in 1995, we did decide that it would be good to add two new funds, one that complemented our S&P 500 fund providing an investment fund that has the rest of the domestic stock market. The S&P 500 is 500 large company stocks, but there are still 5,500 to 6,000 other stocks out there that were not included. So we asked Congress for authority to start our S fund, the small and mid-cap fund. We also asked for authority to start our international fund, which tracks the Morgan Stanley IFA index. And Congress was accommodating in that regard. We had done our homework. We had thorough analysis showing that this would really add benefit to the participants' portfolio, and they agreed. So we do review it periodically, but we've always felt that just adding more funds does not necessarily add value.
Well, I know there was a lot of pressure from the Hill and from the industry itself for an R fund, a real estate investment trust. And I remember at the time the argument, and they were exactly correct at the time. They said, don't worry about the housing market. This is commercial real estate. It's a winner. It's going great guns everywhere. And REITs pay big bucks. And they had a tremendous rate of return. But then a funny thing happened, huh?
Right. Right, exactly. And no, their timing was very good to try to make their case, but we don't start funds because at a particular point in time it makes sense. What we look at is globally, because once we start a fund, we would keep it for a good long time. And so we already have REITs in two of our funds, in the S fund and in the C fund. REITs are simply securities that back up the commercial real estate, as you said. And so we have them. 8% at that time, 8% of our S fund was REITs. And again, this is the design that Congress came up with. It said invest in these broad markets which represent what's going on in the marketplace. So 8% of the small and intermediate securities, or the securities issued by small and intermediate companies, were REITs. We were investing 8% in REITs, just like the outside market itself.
Tom, I want to ask you about the European and Middle Eastern situation in the iFund. We need to take a short break here. We'll be right back on 1500 AM.
everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, February 26th, we're going to be drinking coffee, lots of it, from La Mille Coffee out in L.A. They're going to be in studio. And if you like lamb, then you're going to want to listen to this show. The chefs are coming in to talk all about cooking lamb.
Nikki, that's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
The Caps Kids Club, presented by Dasani, is where kids get in the game. Sign up your child for free, and you'll receive a monthly newsletter, access to interactive games, and the chance to win Caps prizes. Or pay just $15 and receive an exclusive membership kit with an Alex Ovechkin wall decal, invitations to member-only events, open skates at Kettler Capital's Iceplex, and much more. For more info and to join, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCaps.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Pentagon is disputing reports that Iranian ships were docked at a Syrian port over the weekend. Iranian state-run Press TV said Saturday Iranian Navy destroyers and a supply ship had docked at the port of Tartus to provide training to Syria's naval forces as Syria tries to stop opposition movements. Defense Department Press Secretary George Little says there's no indication that the ships docked or delivered any cargo. I'm J.J. Green.
How can we determine which armed aerial scout helicopter is best for the U.S. warfighter? By proving it in competition. EADS North America is ready to prove that our AAS-72X is superior to any other armed aerial scout helicopter out there. So let the competition begin. Saying you're the best isn't good enough for our warfighters. You need to prove it. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
What is the value of a central provider like GSA and its federal acquisition service? How is FAS managing in an era of fiscal constraint? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Stephen Kempf, Commissioner, GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with over 300 delegates and key speakers, such as Lieutenant General Daryl D. Jones, Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel and Services, U.S. Air Force, Honorable Thomas R. Lamont, Assistant Secretary of the Army, Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and Honorable Juan M. Garcia, Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Manpower and Reserve Affairs. This year's event will be held on March 12th through the 15th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. For more info, visit hcmdusa.com. Mention code FNR for a 25% discount.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Your Turn. It's Mike Causey. I'm talking with Tom Trabuca. He is the External Policy Director, the spokesman, if you will, for the Thrift Investment Board, the TSP. And, Tom, you've been in government 31 years, is that correct?
Right. My first government job actually was in 1970, so that's almost 41 years ago now. I've had a wonderful time in government. I first worked for about 4 years with the National Park Service. Then I did about 5 years on Capitol Hill, and then for the last 25 years, I've been here. My Park Service time was seasonal, so it doesn't add up to, full years. But I was lucky enough to have three completely different professions, all within the federal government.
Well, it's interesting. I met you when you worked for Congressman Herb Harris.
That's right.
Of Virginia. That's a
that's
long
right.
time ago.
That's and right, after the 78 election.
Through the union things, yeah. So,
right.
So that's very good. Now, Tom, before the break, we were talking about the different funds. Several people have asked us what the impact, if any, is of the situation in Greece, you know, the potential to default, and it's one day it's good, and one day the Germans are mad at them. And,
right.
And also just the Middle East situation, which is, I guess you could permanently say, is always on a boil, but
right.
with the threat to close the Straits of Hormuz. What's that, if anything, done to the I Fund?
You know, the I Fund has not performed well over the last year, and I suspect some of it has to do with that kind of turmoil. And remember, the International Fund has European, Australasia, and the Far East in it. It does not have Middle Eastern companies in it. And the European section has very little what they call sovereigns. But all of this affects market psychology. And frankly, when it comes to market psychology, your guess is as good as mine. You just never know how it doesn't help. When things are in the shape that they're in Europe right now. Who knows, maybe they found a way out and can build some momentum from that.
A very successful investor one time told me the market runs on fear and greed.
Yes,
and
that's true.
No way to slice it. Got a couple of questions here that people have emailed in. One is very complicated, and one of them needs your guess on what Congress is going to do, and I know you can't do that as a Fed, but this is Stan.
Well, I'm a short-timer now, Mike.
All right, you're ready to go. but he wants to know about this ability to take unused annual leave and put it into the TSP, and could it be instead put into a Roth?
Yes. It could be if the legislation is enacted. The Roth is available for new contributions, and this would be a new contribution. And what this is, for you, bring your listeners up to date, this issue has actually been around for a couple of years. Members of the Employee Thrift Advisory Council, the unions representing employees, wanted to make this available to employees where they could use their terminal lump sum annual leave, the value of it, and contribute from that to the TSP. This is allowed in private sector plans, but it's not authorized for us. We looked into it, asked Congress for authority. Legislators started moving legislation, but it ran into a brick wall because the cost was $317 billion, or million dollars, and you need what's called a pay-for. A couple of weeks ago, they found a pay-for by coupling this idea of the contributions to the proposals to increase the contribution level for the defined benefit plan, specifically increasing FERS contributions for the DB as well as CSRS. So it looked at that point as though they had been paired, and I thought it had a pretty good chance of going through because the pay-for was there and it was in the same area. Although most feds would be unhappy with the
choice,
pay for.
Yeah,
right. But at any rate, that kind of got sidetracked when those proposals to increase the contributions on current employees were sidetracked, and it's only new employees, and the funds that generated were assigned to continuing the payroll, Social Security payroll tax cut. So it's up in the air now. There has to be a pay for it, and indeed the cost has gone up from $317 to $367 million,
right.
I saw from the most recent CBO analysis. So I don't know. We'll have to see what develops.
But if they do it, it's for new money, and you could do that with a Roth, correct?
That's correct.
In the TSP.
Yes.
Okay, another question here from Barnett, and again, it's complicated, but he notes that in the 1980s, the G Fund, that's the Treasury Securities, was paying 6%, and it got even higher.
I think it did in the 90s.
But now it's down very low as with savings accounts and everything else. He proposes here that Congress, that the TSP board asked Congress to fix the rate of return for the G fund at 4%, kind of like a savings bond, and leave it that way. And that way, he said, retirees, if they could get maybe as much as 6, could leave when they leave the government, they could put all their money in the G fund and feel safe about it and have a living return.
Yeah.
Any feasibility to that?
There would be a lot of interest in offering a perfectly safe investment at 4%. You can't get that anywhere.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's any chance in establishing a fixed rate of return. As it is, the G fund does pay the intermediate and long-term interest rate, even though you have the ability as an individual to do interfund transfers into and out of the G fund twice a month. So, you have some flexibility there, and you actually do get an advantage, even though rates everywhere are low right now. The G fund at 1.5% is actually quite good compared to other options that are out there.
Yeah, it's the Henny Youngman rule.
Right.
How's your wife compared to what?
Right.
And it's looking pretty good now. Look, your participation rates have always been very high, I guess because of the match, the 5% match, and as more FERS employees come into the system and more CSRS retire or leave, the number of people eligible for that 5% match has grown. And you're at about 85, almost 86% participation now.
That's right, yeah.
That's phenomenal. And, the one that warms my heart is the participation rate for the uniformed services. Because this is such a good deal for young people, and the military is a young outfit, by and large, and it's such a good deal for people to get into this, and even better if they could afford it to get into a Roth, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Roth is going to be very attractive for those young service members, and I know the uniformed services know that, and they have already begun to put out information to their service members. They take great pride in educating their own troops, and they do a terrific job. The other thing, the broad issue about the bringing in the uniformed services was that 83% of the people who sign up and serve leave military service without any retirement benefit other than their Social Security coverage, because it's a 20-year cliff vesting system, the upper out system. What this does is give them something to take with them toward their retirement after their stint is over, and we have just been delighted to be able to offer that to them, and we work very closely with the uniformed services to serve their needs. They know what their folks want, and we are here as a service organization for them.
I promised several people, because this is your exit interview, at least with us, and you're a short timer, to ask you, as good as the TSP is it really controlled by sinister forces, as we've been told? Now you can fess up.
No, no sinister forces involved here. It's just a whole bunch of different market forces all pulling in different directions, and you can just watch CNBC every day and see how those forces work or how they're explained to the extent we understand them. It just gives federal employees a chance to be out there in the investment marketplace and make the best choices they can for their retirement.
Do you know what the participation rate is at your place?
At our place?
Yes.
The last I looked, I think it was 96%.
Not bad. Well, listen, Tom, we got to run. Thank you so much for being on, and thank you for your service, Tom Trabucco.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. Remember, the show is archived. You can pick us up anytime, and we hope to see you back here next Wednesday. Stay safe.